I know you know, Mark. Before we ever get up, we have to evoke that Holy Spirit. This young man right here gave me the liberty, and I thought, well, he's asking me to go speak, but he wants me to preach. And I'm thinking, oh, that's right up my alley. You know, one time I had a job. I was a Methodist pastor and a football coach. I would coach football on Friday night and preach on Sunday mornings. There was not a better job in the world. In the world. Just amazing. I got to introduce, Sherry's done a great job. She always does a great job when she introduces. But I have to introduce, and people who know I do this. My wife is always with me. She's the love of my life, my soulmate, my traveling buddy. I never leave home without her. I always have to tell a story about her. I had an agent when I first started this. And we had it for about 2 years. And then one day he called me and he said, Nate, you know, you'll make more money if you leave Callie at home. And I said, Doug, it's not his name, right? Change his name to protect the innocent, right? I said, you might have some validity with that statement. I said, she's standing right here. You tell her that. He goes, no. yeah. You're trying to play me. I know her. I know what she's going to do. So you tell her. Chapter 11, verse 6 says, "It is without faith, it is impossible to please God. Those who want to draw near him must believe that he exists. And he rewards those who honestly seek him." I want you to hold on to that thought. He rewards those who honestly seek him. How do you make dreams come true? You know, you have to have courage to dream. Because dreams are goals from God that he wants you to turn into realities. And some people will tell you, don't be careful in how you set your goals. Set realistic goals. No, you don't. Set big, scary, illogical goals. You know why I tell you that? Because if you set big, scary, illogical goals, it makes God happy. Why does it make God happy? Because when you set big, scary, illogical goals, you have to call on him for help. He knows it makes him happy. You got to call on him for help. I grew up in poverty. I'm the middle child of 8 siblings. It would have been 9 of us. My youngest brother died at birth. My father worked at a humble full service station on Main Street. Now, I threw a word out there that a bunch of you, you're young, you don't have a clue what that means. Full service. You have never, ever experienced that. You have no clue what full service means. My father, he pumped gas, he fixed flats, he washed cars, and if you pulled up to that service station, you never had to get out the car. Everything was provided for you. If you wanted a Coke or a cup of coffee, he would go get that. Now, they've fooled you. They've told you that you have a convenience store. You know who that is convenient for? Them. Because you do everything. My mom, she cleaned houses for a living. She was full service too. She washed clothes. She cooked, she cleaned all her life. The 10 of us, including my mom and my dad, we stayed in a 3-bedroom house to sit on cinder blocks. There was no hot water, no indoor bathroom facility in that home. When my mom got ready to give us a bath, her 8 children a bath, she would heat the water up on the stove and pour it into a number 3 foot tub. Some of you don't have a clue what a number 3 foot tub is. This is a teaching moment. If you look at that old house we lived in, just above my sister's head, that's a number 3 foot tub. The majority of the clothes I wore came from the homes that my mom cleaned. Sometimes she'd have to mend them, but they were hand-me-downs. I've just come out of church, worship service with my aunt. And if I could blow that picture up IMAX, you would see holes in the knees of those jeans. And if I digitized it and made it 3D and spun it around, you would see holes in the elbows of that shirt or iron-on patches that my mom had put on. I remember my older brother, he's 4 years older than I, he would wake me up and we would scour the neighborhood alleys. We would look through the trash cans to find the thickest cardboard that we could find, to cut it out, to put it in the soles of our shoes, to keep the heat of the pavement out in the summer, the water out in the rain, the coal out in the winter, because our father didn't have the money to buy shoes on a regular basis. I remember my elementary school days vividly. They were a pivotal moment in my life. My mom used to line us up. She'd give us dry meat and bread, bologna sandwiches, and a brown paper sack, and 2 cents for a carton of milk. I remember walking those halls, walking to school with my sisters. And it was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. Walking those halls with those holes in my clothes, holes in my shoes, carrying a bologna sandwich. It left me with low self-esteem. And that low self-esteem reflected in all my report cards. My report card was filled with C's, D's, and F's. All of them. When I left elementary school, I wanted to drop out of school. I wanted to quit. I was done. I hated it. I hated school. I was sick of the embarrassment. And then I met 2 men who literally turned my world upside down. 2 teachers. Mr. Clyde Hake, science teacher. I walked in his class for the first day, and he literally turned my world around. He took me under his wing. He gave me a lab coat. He taught me everything there was about science. You know what I just said? Had report cards filled with C's and D's and F's. My first 6 weeks in his classroom, I made an A. I made an A. And he told me, "Nathan, you're a smart kid. You can do this." And no one, not a single person I ever met said I was a smart kid and mentioned my name in the same sentence. It was amazing to me. And after I left his classroom, I went to, you know how God works in abundance? I went to meet my 7th grade football coach, Coach Mark Wallace, 6'4". Everything he said and everything he did matched. Howard talked about that. If what you say is the truth, people will follow you. They know the truth when they hear it. You can't fool them. Zig Ziglar said, what you say matches what you do, you are going to be very successful in life, right? He had these life-impacting transformational things he was doing for me, and I just trusted him. And I remember I used to leave fifth period science, and I would run as fast as I could to get to the field house. And I wanted to beat my teammates there. I wanted to beat him because I didn't want him to see those holes. That was an embarrassment. I had holes in everything. I had holes in my clothes. I had them in my shoes. I had holes in my underwear. I had holes in my t-shirt. I had holes everywhere. And I didn't want, especially my two teammates that dressed on side, I did not want to go through that. And I remember one day I thought I had made it. And I'm tying my cleats up. And here comes Coach Wallace. He walks over. He puts his hand on my shoulder. And he says, "Hearn, son, those holes in your clothes, those holes in your shoes, carry that bologna sandwich, it's not an indication of the man you're going to become. It has no bearing on your life, son." He said, "Hearn, you can be anybody you want to be. You can do anything you want to do." Me, coach. Me. You, Hearn. You can be anybody you want to be. I went from being this kid who was going to drop out of school, and I had plenty of examples of that in my neighborhood, to now I had a dream that I turned into a goal that became my mission in life. What do you think I'm going to do? Who do you think I'm going to be? I'm going to be a science teacher and a football coach. At age 13, I decided that. At age 13 in junior high school, I decided I was going to be a science teacher and a football coach, and nothing from that day forward would stop me from achieving that goal. Nothing. How do you make dreams come true? I went to high school, made the honor roll, straight A's. Graduated from high school, received an academic scholarship to college, graduated in 4 years. That's unheard of nowadays, right? Nobody graduates in 4 years from college. Went back to West Texas. I taught science and I coached football for 35 years in the public school system. 35 years, because two men said, "Hey, we believe in you. You can do this. There's nothing wrong with you." They empowered me to do things, great things, without them. They gave me something to believe in that was bigger than myself. With their input, I wanted to coach you. You know, when you coach, you want to coach championships. Once again, God says, "When you believe in me, ain't nothing I won't do for you," right? I not only coached, I coached in one of the premier high schools in the state of Texas. We won more football games than it. When you say Texas high school football, and I'm not trying to make anybody mad, but that's different in Texas. You play before 60,000 people in $60 million stadiums. High school football. Programs make $1.5 million a year. High school football. Just amazing. I coached at the premier school, Permian High School. 6 state championships, 2 national championships, team of the decade. In 10 years from 1980 to 1989, that's the years I was there, we won more football games than anybody in the state of Texas. 124-8-6. That's losing a game maybe every other year. Became a principal and named principal of the year at Permian High School. Went to another school, was named principal of the year at that school in 2010 in Howard. Howard has this thing on his heart about children, about our children. The book of James says, when you see something wrong, do something about it. When you see something wrong, do something about it. So that became my life goal. I have that same heart for children that Howard has. I came out of not knowing where my next meal was going to come from. I came out of not knowing what house I was going to come back to. I came home from being bullied because I was little. And I started a dropout prevention program in the school district that became the best dropout prevention program in the state of Texas, named by the Texas School Business Magazine in 2010, simply because I care. I know what it feels like when a kid sits in my room and they have that look in their eyes. I can see the pain. I know the pain. I went all over the state implementing that program because I wanted to be applicable in any situation. My heart is still for these kids because I'm still coaching and teaching today. My wife and I still go in those classrooms, and if people say things have changed, they haven't. Kids are still hurting. They still feel the same pain. It hasn't changed. The mad mob might say they've changed, but they haven't. They still hurt. They still need help. They still need relationships. All of them. Those two men led me to this. Play the video. My passion, and I've said this several times to many young people that I've talked to, and guys have asked me, you know, what motivates you? What's your passion? And my passion is to see those young people when they come back and they tell me how the things that I've taught them, how it's influenced their lives and impacted their lives. To me, that's what it's all about. That's what your legacy. We all have a legacy. And to have someone to come back and say to you, thank you, what you've done, what you taught me, really helped change my life. That's the greatest feeling in the world to me. My passion is to help people, all people, to achieve that goal. You know, God's mission is to find a place in this world. And everyone has a place. And if you could help someone find their place, there's nothing greater than that. There's not a better feeling in the world than that. That's what they left me with. I wake up every single morning with one goal in mind, and that is to empower people to do great things without me. That's all I want to do with my life. That's it. Nothing more. I tell folks, I said, hey, I'm going to die before my wife. I know this because I'm not going to stop eating fried chicken, pinto beans, cornbread, drinking sweet tea and eating pecan pies. I am not going to give that up. So I said, when I die, call her. She'll know what to do. All I want from a eulogy is to say he tried to help people. And you can put me in a wooden box and bury me. That's it. He wanted to help people. I went into coaching at Permian High School with that frame of mind. And I met, a ton of young men. God almighty. Who needed to hear. They needed to hear. That thing was such a machine. It just, when one of them got hurt and Mojo was their life and they would get hurt and we just stick that next person in there. Some of them came to me talking about committing suicide. Suicide at 18 years old, thinking their life is over because I can't play anymore, coach. Son, are you crazy? Are you crazy? And that's when I have to call them in and pull them in and say, hey, God almighty, son, I love you. Your life is bigger than Mojo will ever be. Any football game, your life is bigger than any football game that will ever be played. Met a young man who had a big faith. He had a big, huge faith. He had one of those big, scary, illogical dreams. One of them dreams that said, you can't do that. Were you insane? Met him when he was in the sixth grade. He told me about his sixth grade. I didn't meet him then. He told me about his sixth grade. At eight, in the sixth grade, he told his dad he was going to play on a state championship team as a center, right? He's a beanpole. He's like, he's tall and he's thin, but he's the tallest kid out there. So he wants to be a lineman, but they make him a running back. Pop Warner. He's not fast. He's not quick. It would take him an hour to run from this wall to that wall. But they make him a running back because he's tall, right? He goes to the seventh grade. They make him a tight end. He couldn't catch a ball if you put super glue on his hand and put it in. They finally listened to him and they made him a center in the ninth grade. But it's improbable. He is 5'11 and weighs 125 pounds. You want to play center? That's the toughest job besides being a quarterback on the team. 90% of the time, what are you doing? You're looking where? Come on. Between your legs. You're looking between your legs with your hands. And they put these big, crazy gorilla beating up in front of you. And they just beat you. They just beat you. He wants to be a center. You have to be smart to be a center, right? You have to know all the defenses that line up in front of you. You have to know them all. You have to know everyone's blocking assignment on the line. And then you have to be able to short snap and long snap perfectly between your legs. Be smart. But he ain't big as a minute. One of the things I coached at Prairie High School, offensive and defensive lineman, I was strength and conditioning coach. Now, as an assistant coach, you have to have one of those, the bad duty. One of the bad two coaches. When I first got there, we had the new rookies, and we get assigned the sophomore team. The sophomore team is made up of the worst sophomores. The good sophomores at Permian High School were put on JV. Juniors played varsity. And the worst sophomore football players were put on the sophomore team. David Connors II was a center on the sophomore team. And I had like 30 of them. And his name was at the bottom. He was last. You couldn't get any lower than that, being last. Right? I remember one day, you know, when you get out there the first day, your eyes get big. You got station over there, station over there, station over there, station over there. And then they blow a horn. You're in the tent, you're looking around. They blow a horn. And you're supposed to go to your station. What is David Connor II doing? He's standing up there with his big light. He don't know where to go. He comes to me and says, Coach, where am I supposed to go? What are you? I'm center. What's your name? David, sir. David what? David Connors. Well, I've got a lot of David, so I want you to go over to the trainer and get a piece of tape put on your helmet. And I want your whole name on it. David Connors II. Yes, sir, coach. That's how he talks. He runs over. The whole time I knew him, David Connors II was on his helmet. I remember his first game. The bad thing about being on the sophomore team when made the game so brutal is this. They would drop juniors down. They couldn't drop seniors down. They dropped juniors down who were played on varsity, who would play on Friday night. This is how it went. We were so prolific, we won so many ball games that our JV team had won 88 ball games in a row. Our varsity team was winning 124 in a row. They couldn't beat either one of those teams. JV played on Thursday night. Varsity played on Friday night. We beat the dog out of them, and then they would load up on Saturday against the sophomore team. They would send those juniors down who had played on Friday night to play against our worst sophomores. And I remember, as again, at Abilene, JV beat them 48-0 on Thursday. They come back on Friday. We beat them 54-0 on Friday night. And now they're walking in, and they want revenge. They want bragging rights, right? So I see these kids walking through, and they're huge. And they got these scarred up helmets. So you know they're juniors who played on Friday night. You know. You're looking at them. So in those games, the coach and I, we played every, because we were going to get our lungs kicked in. They were going to beat us 60-0, 50-0. But we played every kid. And I played David Connors, the second. He got a chance to play. This kid was 6'3", 255 pounds, a nose tackle. We played on Friday night, put over him. And he was taking David like, David was 5'11", 135 pounds. He was taking David like, wow, wow. He was just body slamming him. Just body slamming. And I'm talking to the referees. Are you blind? He can't do that. Can't you see? Referee don't care. He's just running up and down the sideline. I'm screaming my head off. This is crazy. He cannot do that. This is what it looked like. That's okay. Don't try. But y'all remember the scene? That's why you laugh, right? They take Noki. The Hulk take Noki, and he just... That's what he was doing to David. That same thing. So, game's over. They beat us 60-6. I'm walking back to the field house, and I hear this, Coach Hearn! Coach Hearn! And I turn around. It's David Cutter the second. So he's running as fast as he can. And he gets to me, and he says, Coach, how did I play, sir? I don't want to lie to him. I said, David, you didn't give up, son. And that was the truth. He didn't. Every time he body slammed him, he got up and he was right back. Or he went and found somebody else to block. He never gave up. He goes, thanks, coach. We walk a little further and he stops me. He says, Coach, I'm going to be the starting center on a state championship team my senior year. I'm going to be the starting center on a state championship team. I'm looking at it and I'm thinking to myself, that's like turning a koala bear to a grizzly. Are you insane? Son, you weigh 135 pounds. But I don't say that, right? I look at him and I said, David, that's a great goal to have, son. It's a great goal to have. Then he says, Coach, can you help me? That's God right there, right? That's that big faith. God said you need some help, right? And I said, whatever you need, son. What do you want? He said, Coach, can you help me get bigger, stronger, and faster? I said, yes, sir, I can. I said, but this is what I want you to do. You got to meet me in the weight room on Monday at 5:00. I'm not talking about after school. I'm talking about 5:00 in the morning. We got too much to do after school. He does this. And I say, I'll give you everything you need. He does this. I'm sorry, Murray. He goes, thank you, coach. And he's shaking my hand like this. Then he takes off sprinting. And I'm looking at him and I'm going, he just got beat 66-6. He just told me he's going to be the starting center. Did I believe that he was going to be the starting center when he turned the senior and win a state championship? Not at all. Not at all. But you know who did? He did. He believed it. He wanted it. And I guarantee you, he was going to give you everything to make it happen. I ran the weight room, so I would get there at 4:30 in the morning. I'd work out, and then other coaches and people would want to work out. I pull up on Monday morning at 4:30. Guess who's waiting for me outside the weight room? David Connors II. He got there at 4 o'clock. Waiting. I open the door, I take him in, and I it's not a game because I believe in this. I believe this is the place where you turn boys into men. This is the place where you win state championships. That room, I believed in it. And so I'm not going to cut any corners. I'm working it. We're doing five sets of 15. If he missed something, do it again. I'm in his ear. I'm yelling and screaming just like I'm talking to one of those all-state football players who just won the state championship. I'm coaching him, and I'm working him. And when he finishes, he just falls out on the mat. He's shaking. His legs are shaking. His arms are shaking. He's just shaking. He's drenched with sweat. And I kneel beside him. I said, David, this is what we've got to do. I said, you've got to be here every single day this week at 5 o'clock in the morning because you've just broke down those muscles. And if you don't come back, you won't be able to move. You let that set up, you will not be able to move. So you have to be here. And I said, when we get through on Friday, I'm going to write everything up. I'm going to give you all the workouts. I'm going to tell you how to get bigger. I'm going to show you how to get stronger. I'm going to give you all the things you need to eat to get bigger, stronger, and faster. Then I said, David, it's time to go to class, son. Go take a shower. It takes him 30 minutes to roll over. He gets on his hands and knees. He gets up in sections, and he's still wobbling. And then the weight room is from, the weight room door is from here to that door behind the cameraman. And he walks over to that door and he puts his hand on the knob. And I said, David, I'll see you in the morning.
Yes, sir, coach.
Guess who showed up every single day at 4 o'clock? David Connors II. He never missed a day. Now, this is on top. He's got to come every day, and this is sophomore season, September, plus his athletic program, his athletic class. He's got to work both ways. He never misses a workout. He finishes his sophomore year. He comes back his junior year, and he's 6 foot and weighs 162 pounds. That's not saying much, is it? Now, he's not going to have the big biceps and the thunder thighs. He's not built like that. He's got these elongated muscles, so you're not going to see anything on him, but he's bigger. He is stronger. I look at the depth chart coming from very last on the depth chart. He doesn't make varsity, but we keep him. We keep him on the junior varsity team. He's number 10 on the junior varsity team, and he's still working out. This is his junior year. And other students, other players are coming into the weight room, and he's telling them how to lift. He's helping them, right? And he's not missing any workouts. He comes back his senior year. He's 6 foot two. He weighs 185 pounds, right? Still can't see a muscle on him, but he is bigger and stronger, right? Look quicker. Now, this is the real deal. This is his senior year. This is the real deal. We're in tour days. How many of you know what tour days are? Yes, sir. You got to work out in the morning at 6 and you got to work out at 3 o'clock. And this is no joke. This is for this is the season. He's a senior. We're getting prepared to play, right? If you don't win at that school, you better pack your bags. So this is serious. He's not my kid anymore. I don't coach him anymore. He's with the centers and the guards. I did the tackles, so I don't keep up with him. But I look at the depth chart, and his name is three. He's three on the depth chart. And every day that changes because we're getting ready. We're evaluating the players every day. Some move up, some move down. We're evaluating. We're trying to see who the starter's going to be. So I get lost. And I'm keeping up with him. We're getting ready for the opening game. It's in El Paso, Texas. Now, y'all, you know Texas is huge, right? That's a 6-hour bus drive. We have to get the players up and in the on the bus at 4:00 in the morning. And they treat the coaches and the players like dogs. We were eating those. They might give us a chicken sandwich to start out in the morning. And then when we get through playing, just like Howard, they stop by Burger King. I ate so many Burger Kings, I started looking like Burger King. Who wants Burger King? Nobody. But that's all they feed us. We get back home at 1-2 o'clock in the morning. We have those kids up and ready to go at 5:00 in the morning on Saturday. It is a grind. Now, we're getting ready to play El Paso Yesletter, the first game of the season. And it's we get there and the lights are bright. And it's in the mountains, it's cool and it's crisp, and the moon is huge and full. It is a great day for football. A great night for football. This is what we do. We get in a huddle. And the center, the quarterback gives the play twice. He gives it to the center, to everybody, and the center breaks and he goes stand over the ball. Then whatever the quarterback has to say, he'll say it again in the huddle, and he'll give the play and the count again. They close up, they catch hands. The center is out there standing over the ball. I'm sorry, turning my back on you, but he's standing like this over the ball. So the coach who helped me coach the sophomore team, I'm on the sideline, and I'm looking at my script, and he says, "Coach, say, you see who's standing over that ball?" I look up. David Connors the second. That's David Connors the second. He said, I said, "Coach, he's living his dream." And that's when I remember what he told me as a sophomore. I said, "He's living his dream, Coach." He said, "Yeah, Coach, he's come a long way." David Connors the second started 16 ball games at 6'2", 185 pounds. He played against some of the best nose tackles and defensive tackles in the state of Texas, and he beat every single one of them. He graded out, you know, like you get a grade in math and science and English. In football, they give us a grade. We give them a grade. He graded out in the 90th percentile every single game. You talking about accolades? First team all district, first team all area, first team all regional, second team all state at 165 pounds. And you know what they said to us when they gave him second team all state? Because he not only won a state championship, he played on a national championship team. And the team that he played on was named Team of the Decade. And they gave him second team all state. And we asked, why would you give him second team all state? And they said, we couldn't justify giving a 185-pound center all state first team. And I said, that's exactly the reason you should have given it to him. That is exactly the reason you should have given it to him. Because he only weighed 185 pounds, and he beat every single one of them. All of them. Last man standing. Isn't that awesome? And he's like that today. I got a call from a team. I speak to college teams and high school teams all over Texas and other places. And I got a call from a head coach who wanted me to come speak to his team. His team hadn't won a game the whole season. They were getting ready to play the district champion. And he wanted me to come in and just give him some hope. So I said, okay, coach. I called David. I said, David, you want to go with me? He doesn't live far from there. He lived about 35 minutes from the school that called me. Yes, sir, coach. He's 50 years old, right? You know what he does? He's an emergency care flight nurse. Emergency/emergency room nurse. You know the folks that get on the helicopters and they go, that's what he does. And he is flat out good. He loves helping people. I call him. I take a day off, coach. Yes, sir. I'll be there. Now, they need hope. So guess what I'm going to tell them? I'm going to tell them David's story, but I'm not going to tell David I'm telling him the story. I just want him to be there. He comes with me. He just stands in the side of the room, and I tell the story. And then when I finish, I said, now, I know that sounds like a fairy tale to some of you guys, right? I know you think the coaches just want me to bring you here to give you hope. I know you think that that's something out of the movies, but it's not. The real deal is standing right over there. David Conner II, come over here and introduce yourself. Some of you want autographs. I said, that ego coach, who would want my autograph? The world wants your autograph. You have done something that millions of people could never accomplish. But you did it. The world wants your autograph, son. He wants to take a picture. We take a picture after we get through. This is what he says. I've always said every good I've done for God and man like you, coach. You had a huge impact on me and a lot of others. You inspired me to be better. Still to this day. Yes, sir, coach. Still talks like that. Still greets me like that. And I still love him like that. An amazing young man. How do you make dreams come true? God takes goals. And God takes dreams. He wants you to turn them into goals, and he wants you to make those goals into reality. But he don't want little simple things. He wants big, hairy, scary, illogical goals. So you can call on him for support. But you know the thing that he wants from you? He's happy about it because he's going to provide all the resources for you. He's going to have everything. Just like I was saying, and Sherry said, it's waiting for you. It's just waiting for you. All you got to do is want it. And that's all he wants from you, for you to want it. You got to act like you have it. You have to think like you have it. And you have to walk like you already have it. You have to want it. Derek Jeter, in a video, told his parents at age 8 that I'm going to play shortstop for the New York Yankees. At age 18, he was drafted by the New York Yankees at 18, and he played shortstop for the New York Yankees for 20 years. No other position, shortstop. 4 world championships, All-American, every All-Star every year. 3 MVPs, and he's in the Hall of Fame because he wanted it. John F. Kennedy told the world, President John F. Kennedy told the world, America's going to put a man on the moon. Everyone said, you're crazy. Never happened. Guess what? There is an American flag flying on the moon, stuck there by Neil Armstrong, the first man to walk the moon. Where is he from? Where is he from? Where is he from? He's from America. They said he was crazy. But President John F. Kennedy, he wanted it. The Wright brothers. The Wright brothers told the world, we're going to make a flying machine. They didn't call them airplanes. They said, this was in the 1800s. And they tell the world, we're going to make a flying machine. The world said, you're crazy. That's illogical. That'll never happen. Their daddy was a bishop in the Methodist Church. He said, that's crazy. That's against God. God don't want man to fly. My wife and I, we fly over this country. And we get to DFW, Dallas, Fort Worth International. It's international because planes come in from all over the world. And you see those planes out there. We look, and I see those planes out there, call them Airbuses. And they're huge. They're huge. They're double-deckers, and they have hundreds of people on them. And they get on that tarmac, and Sherry Perry said, he said, you see it take off. And it gets in there, and she said, how does something that big stay in the air? It's a miracle. But you know what the Wright brothers wanted? They wanted it. How do you make dreams come true? You dream big, illogical, scary goals, and you turn them over to God. And in God's Bible, he said this. I have given every single one of you in here a measure of faith. And nothing is impossible for those who believe. Thank you.